It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Jonathan, we're going to tackle the biggest topic in gaming right now, which is God of War Ragnarok. However, we need to talk about some spoiler stuff, but we're not going to go past, let's say, about 5 hours into the story, if yes. That. And there's a specific point that we're going to get to. Let's say it's the Ironwood. So I'm going to tell you what's more than that, but you'll know what that part is. So just flagging that. Hopefully I'll have put this in the headline. Hopefully I'll put this in the description that we're not going to give stuff away. It's nothing past the first 5 hours. But we thought we'd dive into those things. And keep in mind that a straight run through the game is about 18 hours if you mainline the story, 18 to 20 hours. A full 100% is more like 40, 50 hours. I came in at about 27, 28 hours. So don't worry. There's a lot of stuff. We're going to be covering, like I said, the first 5 hours, but we're not going to be bringing anything in from after that point. But I want to pass it over to you because I had the pleasure of playing this for the review, and then you've been living on it for the last week or so.
Oh man, it's been ridiculous. First of all, I want to say I'm really proud of you for not making a gimmick intro, because when you said we're going to talk about like the biggest thing in gaming, I really thought you were going to name drop Sonic Frontiers.
I need to wean myself off Sonic Frontiers. If I do a quick little, the thing is, everyone, I don't even know how much people are sick of hearing about Sonic Frontiers. I'm sick of hearing about Sonic Frontiers from my own head. I've now finished that game. Just to very quickly wrap this up, I've put about 22 hours into Sonic Frontiers. I've done both endings. I'm 100%ing all the islands. I'm sick, ill, and horrible, but I'm getting through it. That game is almost unacceptable. It's a complete ridiculous physics broken mess, but I still enjoyed it. I've put a lot of time into it. Anyway, God of War Ragnarok.
I love this. This is the wind up, by the way. We're having a good time. God of War Ragnarok, man. I've been living on this game so much, yes, to the point where I didn't even realize how much it had taken over my life until it got to Sunday of this week. And I realized I was leaving the house for the first time to not either come to work or to go for some grocery shops, food stuff. That's not a sentence. Food, you know what I mean? Like, stuff. All I was doing was waking up, coming to work, going home, play of God of War, waking up, going to work, going home, playing of God of War. And I loved every second of it. Uh-huh. Like, this game has gotten into my brain in the only way that the best games can. Like, already, even during this conversation, I'm thinking about what I'm going to be doing on God of War tonight. Which side missions am I going to tackle? What armor upgrades am I aiming for? What's going to happen in the story next?
Oh God.
I am 36 hours into this experience.
Sweet Jesus.
And have not yet finished it. No. I don't know when the end is coming, so we're not going to do a full spoiler review right now or anything, but I feel like I've seen enough of it to talk about like the general gameplay.
You definitely have.
Talk about especially the early hours, which we're definitely going to dive into in depth here, because it'll be around where other people are, you know, side missions, all of that jazz. Mm-hmm. But to sum up, this is a spectacular game, and I love it even more than God of War 2018. I think this is the better game.
We will do a full podcast on that, because you need like a holistic view on the entirety of the story. I think a lot of other people do too, but I think that comparison will be the thing that keeps coming up. Because one of the reasons that I called this one of the most riskiest sequels ever, or whatever the hell I put in the thumbnail for the review, is that I think it does drag its feet at the beginning. And it's not to make this an overall negative conversation. We'll be very positive about it, but they're almost playing a specific hand across those first few hours, to the point where they kind of want Atreus to become his own thing. And obviously you play as Atreus in that opening bit, and switching over to him was something that in the moment I absolutely did not want to do. It's not that I don't love Atreus and genuinely care about him and hope he does well, but I just didn't want to play as him in that moment. I found the Kratos was infinitely more exciting and interesting, and I find Kratos to be just literally be this living embodiment of doing better than various, you know, from various mentalities that were in the 2000s, whether that be gore happy stuff or just admitting that men can feel in entertainment or whatever. And I like Kratos being a driving force of that. And so for me, when it moved away from him and went to Atreus, that was the stuff that was jarring. And I think that they do it intentionally so, because it pays off later. But how did you find the Atreus stuff?
Scott, what I love about this game is that we both have generally the same opinions on the opening. I also think it drags a little bit. Mm-hmm. But the difference is, when you do play as Atreus, that's when it properly clicked for me. Because until then, the issue I had with the game was that the mechanics just didn't feel like a step up from the original game. I think the game does do a quite a bad job in onboarding players who have been through the first game, even once, because the way it strips you of some abilities, I think just limits the moveset to the point where I was playing the opening, really enjoying it, still thinking it was a great game, but not having the drive that I have now to live on it, to feed off it every hour that I possibly could. Like, in those early hours, I was liking it, but I could have put it down to have a break to play Call of Duty. Mm-hmm. I could not do that now. And to me, it was because the moveset was so familiar. Like, obviously, they take away your runic abilities. Obviously, they take away the armor that you had at the end of 2018. And they even address that in the story, which I thought was quite funny.
Yes. Yeah, he just sort of says, did you use it? He's like, make more. Or something like that.
Yeah.
Give me more.
But the main issue I had was that in that opening stretch, I'm using the more or less the core base moves that I had to start 2018's game with, which made me feel like I've done this before. And for the most part, I was traveling realms that I already had visited with a new,
like a different corridor.
Yeah, with different corridors. You know, you're going through Midgard, and Midgard's great, and now it's snowy, which looks awesome, but I've fought outside of Kratos' house before. And to me, the first 6 or 7 hours felt more like an expansion than a true sequel. However, that feeling changed when you got to play as Atreus, because it's almost hilarious how the game served that up to me. I just hit my apex with the feeling of familiarity with Kratos' moveset. I even said to my girlfriend, you know, I was like, this is great, but every combat encounter I'm in, it feels too familiar. It feels like I'm just repeating the same actions. And almost as quickly as I verbalized that, it hit me with the playable Atreus section, in just the speed of his attacks, the agility of him, the range attacks with the bow and arrow. To me, that shook it up in a way where suddenly it felt like the sequel. And from then on, for me, the game like never looks back, and it's a full sequel from then on there. But I know that you don't necessarily agree with that.
No, I don't. The thing is that I want to have these conversations in full when we do the full spoiler chat stuff, because I can speak from a point of view of where my head was at during those moments, which is to literally say that when the camera pans down and you realize that you're going to be playing as Atreus, I just almost put the controller down. I just sort of sat there for a little bit, just going, I don't want to do this at all. I don't want to push forward on the analog stick. I don't want to continue this. Can I just go back in the room and talk to Kratos? I just don't want to do this at all. And one of the wider problems that I feel a lot of people are kind of slowly getting on board with in terms of the conversation that's emerging out of the last few days is like that idea that Atreus' sections are a bit more generic. They're a little bit more PlayStation Hero 101. That's definitely how I viewed it. I was, okay, it's another bow and arrow guy. It's Ellie, it's Aloy, it's Jin. Like, we've done a lot of this before. And like you were saying before we were recording, that you wish Aloy played as well as Atreus does.
Yeah,
which is true. Like, I mean, it's not that the combat isn't chunky as hell. It was just that I'm going into a God of War sequel. It's fascinating territory where we left off at the end of the original, and where Kratos is fascinating. And I want to know what Eric Williams and Corey Barlog and the team like have in the future of that character. What do they think about the fact they're now in the middle of a prophecy and whatever? And so that like clash between Kratos and Atreus, that building to that point where Atreus is telling Kratos to knock it off in terms of asking him to stop leading them down various pathways to figure out the prophecy, it just felt like the most obvious thing thing to do would be have a conversation between the two of you and not just leave in the middle of the night. So I just didn't want to play as Atreus in that moment, because the story was just so enthralling for everyone other than him.
It's just I love this. I love that we've got completely different
takes.
There's
so much more of this going forward. I feel like I should apologize in advance because I'm really not there for this game in the first 15 hours. I just want to get that out the way. I really didn't like that much of it for the first 15 hours. I think the immediacy, the very first impressions, chunky combat, whatever, but some of the puzzles kind of stand out as just being super gamey. We'll get back to that stuff. But story-wise, I was just like, okay, what is the story? What is the driving force? Because Odin and Thor have dropped in and then disappeared. And the hours go by before you even hear of their names or anything. And I was like, what is this story? And then to deviate so much off and go, well, actually, you're now going to do 3 hours with Atreus, was, like I said, the absolute polar opposite of what I wanted in that moment.
It's so funny, man, because that was the exact thing that I wanted in that moment. And it's not that I don't like Kratos. I think he's an excellent character, and I love him specifically in this game. But to me, especially at the beginning of the game, he does develop as the title goes on. But his arc almost feels kind of complete. He's done the maturation in God of War 2018. He's got to a point where he is at peace with himself, essentially. I think he even says that at some point. When they went to Jotunheim in the first game, he finally found some peace. He understands who he wants to be as a father. He wants to be more caring. He wants to look after his son. So for me, while I enjoy spending time with Kratos, and still do right now,
Atreus is the future.
Atreus is the future. Atreus has, to me, the more compelling arc in this game.
Right.
And a more engaging arc. So when we got to see the game from his point of view, that was the breath of fresh air that I needed. I didn't just need to retread Kratos trying to be mature, because I've kind of seen that.
Oh, no.
And I like it here. But yeah, so Atreus as a character I love here, and I'm saying that as someone who didn't necessarily vibe with him in the first game. I enjoyed him in the first game, but some of the things that they do with him I didn't necessarily love. For instance, the part where he figures out, or he is told that he's a god, and then he goes on this kind of like rampage,
which is my favorite part of that
hubris. That didn't click for me in the first game.
Right.
But his antagonism, if we can call it that, with Kratos in the early hours of this game just felt way more natural, because they're butting heads, but they're butting heads for a reason that I could understand. Like, they love each other, but they just fundamentally want kind of like different things. Mm-hmm. Kratos wants to shelter this kid, wants to make sure he's safe, while Atreus is wanting to figure out who he is, wants to get closer to his giant heritage. So while he was making dumb decisions, because obviously he's a teenager, he's going to make dumb decisions, I was frustrated at them as a character, but I wasn't frustrated at the writing, if that makes sense. I was with the writing, and I wanted to see that friction develop. So when they split up, it felt like a natural development of that friction.
I think for me, it was just like, it felt like they were at it. They should have been able, like, it was just that whole thing, like you said, it wasn't just about, you know, I don't want to just watch Kratos become more mature or whatever. It was the seeds that they had in the trailer where, like, Atreus is saying in the trailer, which is a scene that's in the game too, he's like, stop thinking like a father and start thinking like a general. And Kratos spins around, he's like, no, I will never do that again, because that part of me is like walled off. And it's just like exploring like fatherhood from that character, or exploring the idea of caring from that character. He's had a family before, but they were just plot devices, like all this stuff with Calliope and whatever else. Like, that was just such interesting furtive ground. Like, you've got, like, and just the idea of this retired barbaric warrior who's like, there's just so much ground there in balancing, like, even his role in the world, like his proficiency, like his career that is now like done. And then how do you transition to being a father? And is there actually a role that can be like, you know, is there more reason for those like parts of him to still exist? Like that bit in the 2018 one, when you go down into Helheim and you like crack open that beast and he realizes he's just become what he was before.
Yeah.
And it's just like, but he has to do it to get the greater good. I think that's what makes him such a fascinating, complex character. So for me, there was just so much ground there to do. And it's not that Kratos isn't receptive to like logic or reasoning or a conversation. It just felt like Atreus was just being so petulant and just so like, no, F you, like, knock it off. I'm going to go and do this. Leave me alone, father, like, whatever. And like, Kratos doesn't call him boy until he tries to like run away.
Which is a great scene.
Because it's like, if eventually Yoda's like, because then he's being a boy, but he was treating him like a man or whatever, like someone older. And he wouldn't reciprocate that, which is why that, for me, that was just so annoying. There's so much maturity baked into their relationship across the first game that is almost betrayed at the start of this game to get back to where we were at the end of the 2018 one.
I think betrayed is strong. The way I view it is that we are where they were at the start of the last game, which is a sense of understanding. They understand who each other are at the end of the last game. And whilst Atreus is more mature in this game, I think it's important that he is still a teenager.
Yeah.
He is still someone who thinks he is right, who thinks he knows better than his parents. I mean, I don't know about you, but I didn't view my parents as people until I was about 25, if that makes sense. You know, I just thought they were parents. I couldn't even picture them as having their own experiences that were informing mine. I thought I knew everything. So I very much saw a lot of myself in Atreus that, yes, he might understand his father. He might love his father. He might have that bond now. But that doesn't mean that he necessarily thinks his father is always right. And I like that. That was reflected in the character. And that's why, to me, it was more of a natural sense of drama because it made more sense to me, my brain. And to me as well, it makes Kratos more interesting because I'm more interested in how he handles that difficult side of fatherhood than anything in the first game. Because in the first game, yes, it is about a kind of like quote-unquote human relationship and how you parent someone, but the stakes are kind of so godly that it lost a bit of relatability for me. Like, of course, there's a clear answer to should my godson become full of arrogance and hubris and go on a murder spree? The answer to that is no. In this game, I think it asks the more nuanced question of how much can you trust your child? When are you willing to let go and allow them to have their own life? When should you stop telling them who they should be and let them be who they want to be, or at least figure that out? And to me, that was just more, a little bit more nuanced, a little bit more relatable.
No, it definitely
why
is.
I enjoyed the drama a bit more.
It definitely is. And the whole game gets there. Like the conversation, the entire like conversation across the game is that whole thing. It's just that in that opening bit, I felt like Kratos was pretty receptive to anything. You know, and like even the bit when Atreus calls him an a-hole and walks out, Kratos doesn't bang the table or freak out or anything. He just sort of like walks out there with Mimir and they have like a single father with a grandfather kind of conversation with him. And he ends up leaving and stuff anyway. But it's like, yeah, there's just the level of maturity that was there. I thought like just, it was a bit, It drags its feet across that opening stretch, and that whole bit again, like the first sort of 5 hours in the Ironwoods, or the Ironwood. That's for me. That's the worst of it, quote unquote, because it's like it's not that I don't want to follow Atreus. It was just that at that point in the story, we hadn't really established many of the stakes other than just Thor and Odin, kinda. They're in the background, kinda, whatever. But now we're gonna spend 3 hours, like picking flowers and doing stuff in the Ironwoods, and it's great. I would like the idea of Atreus hanging out with Agrippina. But not at that point in the story. So I'm just I don't want to focus too much on the negative stuff, but I definitely did have a what the hell is this feeling for most of the opening.
And I get it. You know, I've not actually looked at any of the other critical appraisals of this game. I know it's Metacritic score, but I've not seen any responses online intentionally because I don't want to do that until I finish the game.
Yeah,
but, you know,
yeah.
Talking to you and talking to Adam Nicholas, who works on What Culture WWE, What Culture Wrestling. It's not just about WWE.
They've branched out.
You know, the kind of common theme between all of our stories is it takes a little while to get to the game that you want it to be. So I totally agree in that front. It does
slightly push back that it takes a while to do anything that I would view as purposeful, regardless of what I want them to do. Because I just think it takes a while to like to even really let you know what its driving force is.
Sorry, yeah, I phrased that poorly. What I meant was for it to feel like a sequel, for it to feel like, what have you spent the past 4 years creating, if that makes sense?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, where's the drive? What's going on? I do agree with that. I do agree that the pacing is a little off. Some things are a little bit lengthier than they should. However, it did click with me sooner than it did you. It only took you about 15 hours, right? It took me about seven. And even then, the previous 7 hours was still like an 8 out of 10 game, which I can't really sniff at. And now it's like high nines. So that's the only thing I would say about the opening necessarily is that if you're waiting for the game to unveil itself properly, like stick with it because it will.
Yes.
And in the grand scheme of things, for me, I know this might be different for you, but that 7 hours compared to the 37-ish that I put in now, it feels so small. It feels like a purposeful stepping stone to get where I was now. You probably wouldn't be able to get to where I was now if you just jumped straight into it, perhaps.
Precisely, which is like, that's my overall thing, is the same sentiment on paper is exactly what I agree with. They play a specific hand in the opening, which pays off later. And for me, that payoff came further in, specific scenes that happened that I was just like, okay, that's what you've been building to. That's great. I love that. And we'll go from there. I still give the game 4.5 stars, and I still think there are parts of it, especially in the second half, that are just like, I think I refer to it as like medium advancingly important, like just various themes that are in there, various framings of characters, dialogue, etc., that I just think are unbelievably well done. Like, there's a reason that Sonny Santa Monica, Corey Barlog, and obviously the rest of the team are some of the best people in the industry, some of the best people in the medium. Like, it's just, some of that stuff is absolute, ironically, god-tier stuff. But yeah, for the opening stuff, we should pivot into some positives. Some negative stuff will probably come back through, but we should talk about side content, because they really make a point of fleshing out the realms, which was a whole thing in the 2018 one where Barlog said that they tried to do all 9 realms in the original game, and for whatever reason, they had to get rid of 2 of them. And then some of them, Muspelheim and Niflheim, just kind of became like trials areas. Niflheim had the mist area, weird maze-like thing that was in the original one that kind of divided people. I didn't mind it, whatever. But in this one, they fleshed all those things out a hell of a lot more. And the opening 3 areas, if I get them in the right order, I know you start in Midgard, and then you do Svartalheim, and then you do Vanaheim?
You do Alfheim.
Alfheim and then Vanaheim.
Yeah.
So we'll not reclass Midgard, because that's the opening, like, sort of almost tutorial bit. But then the main areas that you're going into, which one do you want to start with?
Well, let's start with Svartalheim, considering it's the first big area that you go to. Yeah. Now, this area... This is where it was very much in the territory of this is more God of War for me. And I liked that whole area. However, it was so similar structurally to the first game where I was just kind of enjoying it, as I said, like an 8 out of 10 game. However, I do think you get to the point where it opens up and you get a bunch of different side stories, specifically surrounding Mimir and his past, where it becomes way more interesting and kind of more freeform with how you interact with what's going on. What I like about Svartalheim is that it's kind of like the entire first game in a microcosm, at least when it comes to the side content. Like, you're back on the boat, you're going from this island to this island, you're changing the landscape so you can get to higher or lower areas, you're unearthing things. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like, again, that's why to me that kind of feels like an expansion almost, because it's very similar in structure to the first game. But that's not to say what's there isn't compelling, because I do
that
love
was, yeah, the that was just that I mentioned the first impressions, which we... I think, well, actually, no, we haven't been able to touch on it yet. It's just that how gamified a lot of that stuff is. And to me, that really stood out, where it's like, go block this geyser and make this one go bigger. Go, like, block this flow of water with your ice and sort of make these things change. And having Atreus and Mimir tell you exactly what to do the second a puzzle thing starts. That stuff started to make itself known and grate on me a little bit. But it's not to say that those parts weren't satisfying. It was still very chunky and very satisfying and tactile to interact with. But you were saying that you felt a lot of that stuff was in the 2018 one, whereas to me that felt like a more meaningful distinction. This one felt more gamey than 2018 did.
Yeah, I think that might be our biggest disagreement, funnily enough, because I remember when we did the first impressions and you were talking about that, and I kind of sighed a little bit, because while I loved God of War 2018, some of like the loot-based exploration and reward system I didn't necessarily love, because in a lot of ways it was just making the numbers go up. However, I actually thought in the early hours of this game they paired a lot of that back, because I didn't get a heavy runic attack for about 10 hours in the game.
Same,
and I'm not complaining about that, and I felt like I wasn't getting as much armor as I was in the first game, and again, I'm not complaining about that, and all of the stuff you mentioned there, like the different puzzles and whatnot. To me, that was all present in the 2018 game.
Well, so I'm only referring to roadblock puzzles. The armor, the loot, that stuff is like a whole separate thing. If I'm talking about like gamifying progression, it's like, and now the spinning wheel that's blocking the water needs to be moved. So we need to go and do this 3-step process to move this wheel. Those are the specific things that I refer to when I'm saying like something is gamified. That's what I felt was like, we're going to roadblock you right now. We're gonna have a video game moment for a bit.
Right.
But I mean, it's true that all the loot system stuff, the armor system, like that all folds in as well. But even those parts, I think, are so much more shiny and right in your face, and I look at the this really overblown glowing chest that is like, oh my god, look at this loot, guys, and then different colored loot and stuff like that. I think that is as forgettable in Ragnarok as it was in 2018.
Oh, see,
which is why I thought it was funny when we started the part and you were like, I'm looking forward to specking a specific armor part, and I was like, I haven't even had that thought in relation to this game.
This is it, right? Because in the first few hours when I was doing all of this loot stuff, I was thinking, I've done this before and I didn't find it particularly compelling back then. Now that armor run is unbelievably satisfying, because I don't know what happened. Maybe it is when you get more abilities and more options within combat and exploration, but suddenly it clicked for me, and like the loot-based system, the reward system that's in the game, had me checking every part of every open world-ish area that I came across, and I love that now. Like, I spent 8 hours the other day just doing side missions and combat trials, and I loved every second of it because the numbers were going up, Scott, and this time I was loving the numbers going up. Oh, it felt satisfying because
the death of all gaming.
A lot of them were tied to stories that I found interesting, the landscapes I found more interesting than navigating the boat around places, which is still a lot of fun, but like I said, that felt like 2018 in the way you were interacting with the world. Other areas are a little bit different in that regard, and a bit more varied, and once you know that the game is going to be more varied, I think it makes me look back on that Svartalheim section as more enjoyable than it was, because when I was playing it for the first time, I was thinking, ooh, is this all the game is going to be? Am I going to be getting a bunch of different boat areas like this, like I was back then? And while there are boat areas in there, there's way more variety, there's way more diversity in the content. And suddenly it clicked for me on that level. So I'm there for the story, but now I'm there for just exploring and leveling up my gear and having a good time.
Yeah, speaking of exploration, they make a point of going like, oh, you guys like that whole idea of like a spoked wheel layout in the 2018 one, of like something in the middle and then you have a bunch of different things around the outside. And you kind of get that as well in Alfheim. It's kind of in Vanaheim, but it's more like corridored off to get to specific places. Whereas Alfheim is like, here's a dog sled and there's a bunch of different Draugr holes that you can go plug up. There's two giant jellyfish. We've spoke about this for like 4 days and we've never said their names right. I'm going to go with Halfluger.
Halfluger. That doesn't sound right either.
The Half Boys. There's two of them. And that's one of the most meaningful and worthwhile quests to do that I think has a really nice little payoff as well when you go there with Atreus. And I think that stuff like that, it's just, like I said, it's that mentality. I remember in 2018 when the water was lower to a certain degree and it was like, okay, you've just freed up like, I don't know, five places you can go to. I remember that feeling being so cool because God of War had never done that before.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like in Uncharted Lost Legacy when they had that that wide linear level where it's like you can go collect all the different statues or you can climb the tower in the middle. And it's like, I feel like the evolution of open world, the open world genre is like the evolution of the stealth genre where those mechanics are just in other things now. And it's like an open world mechanic, is almost like a mechanic now. You get a wide linear bit in amongst other things. And so I feel like those realms are really, really well done. Like I said, like Balrog wanted to explore more realms overall back in the day. And now they do that. Like, I remember at the beginning, it feels like, oh, this is just another corridor, but they flesh out so much more.
I think that is perfectly encapsulated within Alfheim itself, because when you go to that realm for the first time in this game, you are literally going to areas that you went to in the first game. And yes, things have changed within the world. You know, like now it's way more veering towards the light elf side of things, and that's reflected in the architecture. But I couldn't escape the feeling that I was just kind of retracing my steps from the first game, and I didn't know how intentional that was. But then when you get to the end of that realm, an entire wall breaks up, and suddenly you have an open world-ish area to explore.
With a dragon!
With a dragon locked behind a dragon. Bloody locked door. And I thought, that's the sequel there. I've done the stuff from the first game. We're doing that again, but now, literally, we're breaking a wall down. Here's a whole new area with a bunch of new side quests that are exclusive to this game, that are interesting to do with Atreus, that comments on their relationship, and that gets you gear. And it weaved everything in. It weaved narrative, it weaved gameplay, and it weaved like the loot system together in a way that's when the game started properly clicking. And I think it's telling that that's just before you take control of Atreus for the first time, I think.
Yeah. That's beautifully put. I like the idea of like the breaking down the wall and finding the thing behind it, the expansion, but in a genuine sense of like what came before. Because story-wise, like at that point, it was like, well, you can't just spend time with Atreus. Like you can't just go and do all these different things. And Mimir even points that out, not to be negative, but like it's one of those things where Mimir keeps telling you the thing that's obvious. Like in Alfheim, where he's like, he just wants to spend more time with you, lad. And I'm like, shut up, man. I understand.
Every time I thought I had gotten to the game that Scott Telford loved so much, I would come into work and say, Scott, I loved this moment last night. And you would say, verbatim, I think I hated that.
Yeah.
And that was one of those moments when you're in Alfheim and you're in. Atreus is really suspicious of Kratos and why he's helping him free this animal.
But yeah.
And he keeps saying, you know, over and over again, he's like, well, like, why, like, what's your motive?
Why
guy?
Do you care about
why
this?
Why do you care? Like, this seems out of character for you, my father. And even after you free him, he asks him one more time.
Yeah.
And he says, like, come on, dad, like, what was the real reason? You must have had something here you wanted. Was there some loot that you were interested in? Is there an ulterior motive, a lesson? Mm-hmm. And then Mimir says, he just wants to spend time with you, lad. In the delivery of, he just wants to spend time with your lad in that kind of exasperated way.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Man, that was like one of the most emotionally impactful things in the game so far. In another reason why I started to properly love it. So then to come in the next day and be like, Scott, I've got this line that I loved. And you literally said, I know the line you mean. And
yeah, as you started to describe it. Yeah. Because it's too on the nose. Like you've got, like I said, you've got this. In that scene, you're hanging a lot on Kratos' reply, and I'm there for Kratos' thoughts on that scenario. His own son is asking, why do you care more than you did before? Even though I would say that he's very much showed emotional vulnerability at the end of 2018's game, so there's no real reason why Atreus was wondering why Kratos cares when he went through all that stuff in the last game and took him up the mountain to scatter the ashes. So already I was like, this is a bit... I didn't like how on the nose that was. But then still, I'm more interested in Kratos' response to everything, so to have that taken away, and then Mimir just spell out the obvious thing, I didn't like that at all.
I think, and again, not to spoil anything where the game goes, but although I can come back to the idea that although they are at a better place at the end of 2018, they're still not like a proper cuddly father and son relationship. Like they understand there is a respect and understanding and love between them, but that's not necessarily expressed even at the end of 2018's game. Like it's not, he doesn't like, you know, suddenly become incredibly vulnerable. So I like that they're still learning how to express their feelings. And in that moment, I actually personally love that Kratos isn't the one to say it. I like that someone else has to say it on his behalf because he's there to express it through his actions, but he might not be there to express it through his words yet. And that's what really resonated with me. I don't know. I think I cut this game a lot of slack in a way that I think you might not, because you told me that when you got that line, you felt like you as the audience were being over-explained to. And that stuff works for me because I keep coming back to the fact that Atreus is still a kid and he needs this stuff explained to him. Anecdotally, I just keep coming back to my own relationship with my father. And it's like, I still, to this day, at the old age of 27, nearly 28, need verbal affirmations. Like if my dad or anyone that I know does something and shows me something with their actions like Kratos would do here by just spending time with me, I would need that confirmed. I would maybe be suspicious. I might not know what you're showing if you're not telling me it. And I think that kind of like connection needs to be verbalized in a way, because I think a lot of us, maybe I'm just speaking for myself, you might do things for other people that you think shows how much you care. But just because you think it, this goes back to something in a sec.
Yeah.
Just because you think it, just because that's the intent, doesn't necessarily mean that's conveyed, and someone might not appreciate the gravity of what you're doing.
True.
And I like that there. And it also goes back, sorry to keep rambling.
Do it.
To a theme that absolutely permeates the early game and even later game. It's the idea of intent versus consequence. Mm-hmm. And they're talking about that. Like, oftentimes it doesn't matter about the intent if the consequence is a certain thing. If the consequence is bad, doesn't really matter about intent, because you're still going to have to deal with that consequence and you're going to have to clean it up. You're going to have to make amends.
So with the Aesir, backing one side in the war and then it all kicking off anyway.
100%. Like, their intent was good. Their intentions were noble, but they come back to that realm and they realize, oh, did we just make things worse?
I thought that was really on the nose as well.
Well, there we go. But it worked thematically for me. Yes. And it kind of, that idea permeated throughout these conversations like that. You know, Kratos's intent is to spend time with his kid and to show his emotions through actions. But the consequence is, Atreus doesn't know that, and he's suspicious and needs it spelled out to him. And I just thought that was a nice little microcosm.
I think it's. I think I'm glad that it worked for you in that way. I think one of the best things about this game is how it does make you think about your own relationship with a father, or if you are a father, thinking about your relationship with your kids. I think the conversations that come out of just seeing a depiction of fatherhood or a depiction of parenthood, I think they can be massively positive. And I think, like I said, the conversations that come out of them in any direction are worthwhile for the most part. I think that side of it's great. It was just that, for me, I mean, Mimir is infuriating in this game for me. Like, I'm so negative on this opening bit. I promise as we go forward, I'll pivot. But if we're only talking about the intro bit, my mindset for most of this opening was I'm not enjoying this, and I really don't like a lot of the decisions that they make. Design-wise, Mimir comments on everything way too much, whether that's just like you try and pick up a bit of an item. He's like, you're picking up everything, aren't you? And I'm just like, yes, I am, Mimir. I've been doing this for years, mate. We did this back in 2018 and for the 3 years in between. So I don't know why you're mentioning it now. Starting to spell out the story, not just comment on every last thing or cut off worthwhile dialogue between Kratos and Atreus by just saying, like, calm down, brothers. Oh, stop talking. I'm like, shut up, granddad. We're trying to have an actual conversation here. So I was already a bit fed up with him anyway. And I really like the character, which is why I was annoyed that he got in the way so much here. So for him to then start spelling out the story parts, I was like, oh my God, is this the level of audience you think you're addressing, where people need to have stuff spelled out? Is that not one of the accessibility options or something? Or one of the options in the game that I can just turn a slider down? Less Mimir, please, because there's way too much of him.
I am conflicted on this because, yes, I am so sick of both Atreus and Mimir telling me the solutions to puzzles after 2 seconds, or telling me when I've opened a door, maybe we should go through that door. Maybe that's where we need to go. I know it is, because there's no other path.
Do you want to spend more time exploring the realm before you go back to the main quest?
There's no other path. If that helps people, that's really good. But I would like the option to, with those hints, maybe turn off some dialogue or turn it down or whatever, because it does get in the way at times. But
yes. Just super quick, right? If they gave you a Kratos button, because he has deadpan responses to everything where he just goes, no. If you just had a button where you could just cut people off and go, I know, or whatever, that would be incredible.
That'd be pretty good.
Yeah.
I would take that.
Do that in God of War 3.
Mimir as a concept, though. Mm. I love in this game, Scott Telford. I thought 2018's game was elevated massively when you get Mimir and he starts telling you these stories. And most importantly, I love the development at the start of this game that Mimir is kind of just family now, or at least he is in this moment in time, you know.
He's a brother.
He's a brother. He carries him around. Kratos carries him around everywhere. And he even is his confidant. Like, when he wants to parent or discuss how is the best way to parent Atreus, he talks to Mimir in confidence. They have chats. If you read the journal entry on him, he talks about how he finds his company, you know, adequate. And that's pretty good for Kratos. He considers him a genuine friend. And I think where we pick up with Kratos at the start of this game is great because of that, because he's come such a long way since the god, even in 2018, who, you know, wouldn't talk to Freya as soon as he found out that she was a god. Mm-hmm. Now he's someone who can interact with these people on a civil level, even find friendship, even find adopted family with Mimir. So while he is a wind-up merchant and while he is a absolute big mouth, I think he's earned the right to be a big mouth.
I think that's fair. I like all the character development. I like Mimir in theory. It's just a design thing. I feel like somewhere along the way, they had to crank up a bunch of sliders for a hashtag mass audience, and those are the things that I bounce off, whether that's really obvious puzzle solutions, whether that's really glowy loot chests, whatever it is, like really obvious deflection markers, UI elements when something's coming at you. It's like, this is the bright blue one, this is the bright yellow one, or the bright red one. And again, you can turn those things off, but I'm never going to do that. I'm going to experience the game that you've designed, whatever your like through line approach is. I'll take that in as the consumer, as the player. And so stuff like that kind of stands out. But yeah, in regards to the overall few, the first few hours, it is kind of like finding its footing, and they're finding their place in the prophecy and what happens. What does it even mean? Like, only really Atreus has seen the floating version of the upcoming Ragnarok prophecy and trying to make sense of that. We didn't talk about Vanaheim very much. We'd dive into a bit of Vanaheim.
Yes, Vanaheim is one of the realms that like really kind of blew me away, like visually. Structurally. I think that whole area is great and full of so many secrets. Like I haven't got to all of the realms yet, or at least been able to explore all the realms in a freeform way. But Vanaheim keeps on giving to keep it vague. Like there is so much within there that reveals itself.
Did you get the orb?
From a side content place, I did get the orb. I got all of Lunda's armor pieces as well. I rinsed that place to death. And I just thought that was another moment where I thought, like, this is the sequel. This is the sequel that I've been waiting for. Because it just gave me something new. And I love the concept of those wolves chasing around the sun and the moon to turn things light and dark.
I did too. But I thought it was weird the way they brought them in.
Interesting.
Because emerge out of a like a cliff face and you just see it happening in the sky.
Yeah.
And no one says anything. And I was like, the whole sky just changed, guys. Are we not going to? No? Okay.
I like the idea that just happens every day. That's just how night becomes dark. Yeah. This is just Vanaheim. This happens.
True, but in this context, they know that that heralds the beginning of Ragnarok. So are they not like looking at that going, oh my God, we're too late? And the sky's falling.
They don't. Unless I'm getting my lore wrong, it's not just them chasing the things around. I thought it was specifically one of them chasing an arrow to the moon.
It is, but like that's such a similar visual that I thought they would say something. I think as you come out of that bit, someone says like, "Oh, look at the sky," but there's nothing on Kratos' part or anyone just going like, "Well, that's where." I don't want Kratos to be like flippant, but just anything. I just thought it was a weird beat. But yeah, I think you can change the time of day. Like, visually, it looks incredible. The whole like tear through the sky thing. But yeah, I feel like I'll carry on.
No, you carry on. Please.
No, it was just that idea of you think you're going into the realms thinking it's going to be a repeat of the 2018 one where it looks like a corridor where each realm in the 2018 one was just a kind of a set map. But then one thing that kind of gives it away is if you zoom out, you'll realize how much you can zoom out and just how much is hidden in like the fog of war or whatever. And then it slowly fleshes things out. But even stuff like banking left when you first get there and doing the orb quest or whatever, rather than going forward and doing everything else, that's like an indicator of just how much more is in each realm.
Yeah, 100%. And like I say, you know, all of that stuff, I can just get lost in because I find the ensemble of characters that are either returning or are introduced in this game really interesting, and I want to do their personal missions and see what they have to offer. And I liked that, you know, a lot of the areas that you're exploring are compact enough that you can almost do everything in a couple of hours, but have it feel satisfying.
Yeah.
In the previous game, and this one still has this to an extent, sometimes you would find side missions that you can't complete for hours because you need something in particular. But for the most part, in this game, if you go to an area and say you find the corpse of someone and a ghost is speaking to you, you can find all of the stuff you need for that quest within that area, which means you complete it and then move on to the next thing. And there's enough in this game that the next thing is always just as interesting.
Yeah.
So I like that you had a sort of, they got the gameplay loop right where I was finishing off quests, feeling tangibly stronger and moving on to another just as interesting quest, if that makes sense.
The thing is, some of the exploration stuff, like there's something you get later in the game that it's like Metroid, like they'll show it, you can very much tell, like, oh, I don't have the item for that yet, or whatever. And there's bits of that that sort of like will slowly push you back towards the main path if you try and explore a bit too far earlier in the game. But I like that feeling. Like I always love Metroidvania, so it's like threading that into other genres, little sprinklings of Metroidvania stuff, like in Arkham Asylum or like in this, realizing that you kind of mentally bank, like, okay, I'll come back here later, and it works out. And you find something better later. We didn't talk that much about, or I didn't ask you what you thought of the Ironwood stuff and Agrabodo in general and just the Atreus stuff. We can get back to realm things, but I never actually rounded that off before.
Yeah, let's talk about
that. Too busy
that.
Complaining on this side of the table. Too busy being a big negative.
Because, like I said, I love all of the times you switch to Atreus in this game. Mm-hmm. And the Ironwood stuff in particular was another moment where I was just thinking, you have so many cards to play.
Right.
And I am loving them all, Scott, because that was another realm.
Is this inscription? Because I'm loving all these. cards.
Very good. That was another realm that obviously we hadn't been to, but looked gorgeous and offered me a game that I could not get the first time around, and that is exploring who Atreus is and who he wants to be, and what does he get up to away from Kraos? Who does he make friends with? How does he operate? So for me, that entire Ironwood section, while paced a little weirdly, kept giving me missions that I really enjoyed. And before you say I'm mad, the fight with the giant granny was unbelievably good. And when you messaged me saying that you'd seen people disparaging it online,
someone wrote it up in like a viral tweet, and I realized that I'd blanked that from my mind because it was so bad to me.
I know I keep saying it.
Yeah.
Another one of the moments where I was like, I love this game, and I'll tell you why. The granny fight.
Yeah.
Also, just weaved in everything that I love. Weaved in the loot, weaved in the narrative, weaved in this new sense of exploration, this brand new world. I just thought the idea of you being Kratos, big muscly Kratos, being put in an environment where you're literally facing off against what appears to be like a fairy tale style giant.
Right.
You know, you're in this kind of,
it was like,
a
Witcher boss.
Totally. Yeah, it was very much like a Witcher boss. You're in this like twisted Hansel and Gretel style environment where you're...
Felt like a different game.
It did, but yeah. I loved that, man. Like, I keep going back to like those opening hours, but because I was so a little bit let down by the fact that I was in Midgard again, I was on a boat again, I was in Alfheim again, in the same area as I was before, the fact that they threw me something so new with this area, in the fact that it was so different to what the game had offered me before, I couldn't help but love it, especially because I thought it was well executed. If it was badly executed, I'd have said no, but I thought it was difference with a point in difference, which offered a lots of variety to the game.
I am very curious what people think of that section overall. The more people get to it, the more people play through it. Because, I can't lie. I didn't willing to save this for a wider conversation.
Can I just make a clarification?
You can.
I said you were big Kratos fighting the granny. You're not. You're Atreus, of course. But
I took that to mean like it could have been Kratos. Because in the world, like what if Kratos came across? Like it means the giants exist at that size. I took that to be what you kind of meant.
I appreciate it.
But that whole thing with Atreus, like I said, I didn't want to play as him in that moment. I was like, oh my God, it's another bow combat thing. It's just PlayStation 101. I thought his dialogue became very MCU-like, where he's just kind of quipping to himself and talking to himself and worrying about everything. I didn't like Argopoda's introduction. I was just like, oh my God, it's another MCU character. I don't like this. And then having a fairy tale boss fight, and then picking all the flowers and doing all the things and all the little mini quests that you had to do in Ironwood, and then having that boss fight. And I was like, can I just get out of this whole, to me, generic section? I just didn't like any of that stuff. And so when they were like, you're tiny and it's a giant boss, and I was like, I did this in It Takes Two. I did this in Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons. I have done these fights before.
Right.
And where I'm tiny and I've got to like, you know, hit the ankles to make them stumble. It's like, we've done this giant fight 10 times before.
Maybe that's it, right? Because I haven't really done those fights. I don't think I got to that point in It Takes Two, in Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons. Spoilers, I gave up on after level one. I just never finished that game.
What?
That's a different podcast topic.
But
I never did it. Me and my girlfriend tried to play it twice. Never got past
you
that open section.
Brothers, Two Sons?
Nah, man, not for me.
But it's really good.
Yeah, but now I've got God of War Ragnarok.
You don't need that.
Same boss fights, so it's just as good.
It's true.
Yeah, so for me,
I'm also, actually, I'm a clarification on myself. I think I'm misremembering It Takes Two. I will think of what the giant boss fight is before the end of this podcast. Carry on.
Please do. What I was going to say is, what I would push back on is you calling it generic.
Yes.
That hurts me on the inside, because like I said, that was one of the most imaginative parts of the game so far.
Interesting.
Maybe not in terms of, you know, what they were literally pulling from, but in terms of what I have seen within this series and within these two games specifically, felt so new and fresh. And I just loved the visuals of the environment, and I loved the visuals of the combat as well, with her using paint in the actual fighting, which added literally splashes of color to the enemies and the environment. And I thought that looked really sick. And like I said, something that I hadn't seen before. And yes, there are maybe pacing issues within there, because it does go on when it feels like it's wrapping up and keeps introducing brand new big threads that you need to pursue. But it all genuinely, for me, came together in that granny fight.
Right.
And especially the moment where she's yelling at her granddaughter and, you know, she's walking away in the camera, teary-eyed. And, you know, she's yelling at her, saying, like, oh, you don't come back because I'll bloody kill you, or whatever she says. It was emotionally resonant and added to the themes of the game of, like, especially kids like Atreus trying to figure out you know, their place within the world, their place within their families, and who they want to be, and kind of dealing with not the trauma, but I guess in her case it was specifically trauma of how they have been raised and the family dynamics they come from. And I thought that was just... It was very good.
It definitely ties in very well. That whole thing of sort of generational anger is something that like permeates the entire game. Like, not to talk about what comes later, but there's a lot of stuff that they dive into with that. But speaking of generational anger or character development, I think the best character writing is in the side quests overall. Like, you do get incredible moments down the main path, but the kind of conversations that I just want to sit and listen to happen in the side quests, because Mimir doesn't interrupt anyone. He just lets them talk. And you get Kratos talking about his past. You get him talking about his different customs that he had when he was in Greece, or like his history as a Spartan and things like that. And like, I just want to shout that stuff out. Like, we mentioned the realms a little bit, but the idea that they wrote even plot, like answers to certain plot points that are major plot things from 2018, I'm not saying what they are inside conversations here that you may or may not trigger, to the point where I hit credits and still didn't know something.
Right.
And then I've recently been Googling because more people are playing it, going like, oh, actually, I randomly got an answer to that. And then that's kind of fascinating. I don't know what I don't really like that, because I think it'd be better if it was signposted. But in terms of character depth, I think if you literally make a point of spending time with someone, it's worthwhile.
It's ironic that you can't please old Scott Tilford. No. If the signposted too much, you complain that they're being too on the nose. If they don't tell you where it is, it's like, well, I missed it.
It's the Last Jedi all over again. You just can't get it right.
I would fully agree with you there, though. I've been comparing this game a lot to 2018's because of course I have. So I will say right now that I really, really enjoyed 2018's, loved it in parts. But to me, personally, and I get a lot of hate for this, it's not like top games of all time for me.
2018 isn't.
Yeah, it's not. It didn't resonate in that way. I think it's really good, but this is resonating more. And while I love the boat rides in 2018's game, you know, in terms of how it gave you exposition about the world in a really interesting way, it fleshed out characters who don't appear, like Thorne Odin, in a really unique way by getting these stories and these tales relayed to you. Mm-hmm. What I like about this game is that you pretty much know everything because you were told it in the first game, and now you just get those conversations in the boat or on whatever vehicle you're on, and it relates to the characters who are in that vehicle, and you get to talk about, like you said, Kratos' time in Greece and about their relationship and what their favorite food is, and
what
Kratos' favorite weapon is. And it might sound like nowhere near as weighty as the stuff that came before. But to me, it's weightier from a character perspective, because I want them to have that kind of small talk, because it bolsters their relationship in my eyes and gives you a deeper insight into who they are as people.
Well, yeah, exactly, which is why I get annoyed at Mimir breaking that stuff up in the main. But like, I love that stuff in the side content. It's an interesting thing, because I didn't think about it that much. I don't really think of God of War 2018 as a fish out of water story, even though it is. Like, obviously, you've got Kratos from Greece coming across Greek history or whatever, Greek mythology, and then being thrown into Norse mythology and the crossover. Because we've not even talked about it here, but the fact that he's the God of War of Norse mythology.
Yeah.
And the kind of, they don't do that much with him in the opening bits anyway. Like, the conversations of, like, we just saved you, and he was wielding the Blades of Chaos for a little bit, but we don't really talk about their approaches to war. I thought they would do way more with that, especially because they have that whole thing with him, you know, don't act like a general, act like a father, and I thought they would do more with that, but they do not.
I'm dipping my toes in here because I don't want you to accidentally tell me anything, because I haven't seen the full story, but what I like with Tia is that I think he is purposefully disappointing. I think they subvert a lot in this game, in terms of what you expect, maybe because of the stories that you were told in the first game, in the reality of them, like the nitty gritty reality of them. So when you free Tia and you've heard all these stories about him uniting the realms, you know, being this fierce warrior, and you get him and he's a broken dude.
He's just a pacifist.
Yeah, he was gone full pacifist, who isn't who Atreus imagined him as being. Like, I like that beat because I feel like they do it all the way through, even in small situations, without spoiling anything. You know, if you talk about a place in either this game or the other game, and then you finally see it, and it's sometimes intentionally disappointing because it doesn't live up to the tales that have been established.
Right.
And it's like, this is the reality of them. And I like that idea, and I like that it kind of fits with Kratos' character as well, because he's this god of war. Mm. He's viewed in all of these stories as someone who, you know, brings death and destruction and is capable of all these things. Mm. And that was true for three full games and a bunch of spin-offs. Mm. But now he's someone else as well. You know what I mean? If someone who knew about Kratos from before met him like we're meeting Tyr, I'm sure they would have the same sense of disappointment almost.
Yeah, I mean, I like what they bring to the table with Tyr. I like the idea that he represents, you know, Kratos not engaging with anything, just sort of saying, look, just lay the blade down and refuse to ever pick them up again. And what does that feel like, that agency in those group dynamics? I think that's what I love that Tyr brings to the table. I quite like that they're subversive in the marketing. I feel like subversion is just across the board these days. It's like you advertise one thing, you do something completely different. Maybe that's because I mentioned Last Jedi before, but I think in regards to Tyr, I like the conversations that, you know, like in theory, there's conversations that you can have more with him. But that what he represents, I think, is essential, because it's a side of Kratos that I think he keeps entertaining of just saying, what if I just didn't engage with this at all? What if I didn't even think about the Ragnarok prophecy and just sat down with Atreus and ate some food and didn't do anything? It's like there's a whole potential version of this, of his story that just is like that. But yes, we're going to wrap this because clearly there's a lot to talk about. And we've only talked about the first 5 hours.
It's nuts, man. Like when we were trying to plan this podcast, there was just so much we could have talked about. And like, what blows my mind?
Go on.
There's so much I could talk about right now.
Uh-huh.
I've not even finished the game.
No.
I've played 36 hours. And I've got, there's so many story beats we haven't mentioned.
Yeah.
And then so many story beats to come.
Yeah, you've not
I'm
even.
Like,
no.
How, like, I don't want necessarily for listeners of this podcast to be subjected to God of War chat for the rest of the year.
No.
But it is a game that is big enough that we could talk about it till the rest of the year is over.
We
probably
might see about doing some bonus podcasts in between the main three.
Great idea.
Maybe something like that.
Let's do that.
Because me and you will have a lot to say.
Yeah.
And we can, you guys can all go on the journey with us, because this has been the first sort of 5 hours. This is from the beginning of the game to the Ironwood Watt.
When we're done, let's get some pints.
Okay.
Let's not tell our bosses we're coming here after hours. Let's crack a few tinnies open and let's like do a big bonus.
We should clearly get
God of
mead.
War one.
Get some mead.
I don't know if I like mead.
I love mead.
I drank some wine. They
you
drank
get some wine.
Wine.
Mead is just wine that's old.
You know what I always wanted to drink?
Yes.
Wine from a like wood bottle. You know how like they drink them in tankards here? Like kind of like mead and
a
whatnot.
A wood bottle.
A wood cup, I should say.
Uh-huh.
Just like a wooden thing.
Right.
I'm
right.
That is either going to taste disgusting because it's going to make the wine taste like damp wood.
I don't know if that would be good.
I know, but I feel like it might.
You can
be
treat the middle of it so it gets all like shiny and preserves the flavors or enhances the flavors.
Yeah.
Either way, we'll figure it out. The idea, because God of War Ragnarok is like the biggest release in quite some time. Obviously, there's Elden Ring, but in terms of a story, when was the last time we had a next like installment of it? Probably this year with Horizon Forbidden West. But this feels like a much bigger deal. And I feel like the story of this game is being discussed a lot more than Forbidden West's story was.
This is kind of a strange one, right?
Mm.
Because, yes, I agree. Like, if we did some videos and some podcasts on Forbidden West, but I'm not thinking about that.
No.
And I really like that game, you know, 4 out of 5, it was really good.
It's fine.
But this one, there have been times where I've been playing it where I've almost been damning Elden Ring for existing, because
okay.
In any other year, for me, God of War Ragnarok is an easy number one spot for game of the year. Like, it does, its highs are incredibly high.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, Elden Ring is there. And if I was Sony Santa Monica, I'd be thinking, God damn it. Why did a game of the generation have to come out the same year we released a game of the generation?
If I was Sony overall, Elden Ring has taken out Horizon and God of War. That's the worst year to possibly release both your games.
So true.
But yeah, we'll figure out some sort of podcast schedule. Get in touch with us on social media. Let us know what you think in regards to God of War's first 5 hours and how you'd like us to cover stuff going forward. Because we'll at least do one giant spoiler conversation that we'll film and put on YouTube. And then we might do some additional podcast stuff as well. For now, this has been The Wind-Up. I've been Scott Tilford. You've been Josh Brown.
Always a pleasure, Scott.
Always a pleasure to be heard by all of you. Didn't do the intro till the end, but we'll catch you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right, because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns, so you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1, only from Rust-Oleum.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.